Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
Vegan 1.0 didn't get us where we needed to. It didn't turn enough of the country on, didn't turn enough young people on, didn't make it into like the common kind of mainstream in the way they wanted it to. And it was kind of pushed to the edge and marginalized, and it was weird. And the food was good, but not great and not accessible or kid friendly. Where Vegan 2.0 is specifically, in our minds, designed to expand the tent to the 97%.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Adam Weiss. Adam is the CEO and director of Honeybee Burger, a plant-based restaurant with locations in Southern California and more coming soon to other parts of the country, including New York City. Adam started out in finance, and I was very curious to know how he went from hedge fund guy to vegan restaurant guy. Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's awesome. I want to start, I kind of want to go through this trajectory of how you go from a hedge fund guy to a plant-based food guy.
So growing up in LA, as I did, we were always pitched movie deals, scripts, and restaurants. That's kind of the thing. And, you know, you never did them because they generally didn't make sense. And they were all ego-driven. And so, you know, I grew up going to business school and then going to Wall Street, like never having done one and always being disinclined to do them. I started my first hedge fund. We did fairly well. I rolled into something a little bit bigger. Actually put that deal together during the week of 9/11, which was weird and crazy. New York based, of course. And then really as I kind of built the business, I was getting the most enjoyment and reward from having hired all these analysts who would then do so well, they could start families, have kids, buy houses. And I was proud of that. Beyond the making money for wealthy investors and institutions, that's what mattered. So I started thinking of impact and trying to do something that would be meaningful. As we got into like 2009, 2010, I had exited my hedge fund and having done fairly well. And I was looking for ways to be impactful, not start another hedge fund and make rich people richer, but maybe do something that could help and could leave a mark in a good way. And lo and behold, I got pitched this vegan restaurant concept. At the time, I wasn't really vegan. And it was from people who were real estate experts, my friends Chris and Lisa Bombright. And they were very thoughtful and not prone to doing restaurant deals. And so they said, Adam, we've known you 20 years. We're going to pitch you a restaurant. And I said, okay. And they told me about Cafe Gratitude up in San Francisco. And they had become smitten. And they were already at the point where they had acquired the rights from the founders and were really set on opening in LA and then expanding.
So wait, before I let you go farther about this, for people who don't know, and I'm sure a lot of people haven't eaten there and don't know, It's way more than a vegan restaurant. Like, it's an experience, right? Will you just give a little, like the first time you went, walk us through it.
Yeah, so Cafe Gratitude is a thing. It is far more than a restaurant. And I went, and it was on the mission, and a dicey part of it. I go in, and you're transported not so much physically, but metaphysically, because people there talk, think, and act differently, which is strange. It sounds culty, and it is.
Yes.
And it certainly was. Google it. From the waiters to the food runners to the customers, they all really embrace this idea of eating and dining and sharing community on a higher level. To give you a concrete example, waiters infamously would ask you before you ordered the question of the day. And that eventually morphed into, would you like to hear the question of the day? But generally, you would sit down, they'd bring you a menu, and they would say, welcome to Cafe Gratitude. What makes you happiest in your life? I'll be back in a few minutes. and nobody really understood. Now, the true believers did. But if you were new to that world, you were thinking, what's happening? I thought I was going to get, you know, quinoa and kale chips. And instead, you were transported into this world where they really, truly believed in enlightenment, awareness, thoughtfulness, conscious consumerism, and not in a preachy way, in a soft way, but nevertheless, really heartfelt. And so, yes, everything on the menu are affirmations, which that I say it, it sounds so cheesy. So they have dishes, I am humble, I am effervescent, I am all inspiring, and things like that. And you can't, and they, when you would order, and I have many times, one of the dishes is called I am humble. And they would say, okay, when they would read your order back, they would say, you are humble, you are effervescent, and so on. And you are liberated. And it was really kind of weird.
It's weird. Even you saying that kind of gives me the chills. Like it does do something when someone says that.
100%.
Like, right?
When you're sitting there, you've never been spoken to like that in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And B, it's you're off guard.
Yeah.
And you're sitting down, you're ready to eat, so you're open-hearted. So you're really open to the messaging. Genius. Now, would that translate outside San Francisco? I wasn't sure. The food was great. They were crowded. I spoke to the customers wearing my due diligence hat. And I would ask them, you know, hey, what do you like about gratitude? Or why are you here? Or why do you come back here? And you would get answers literally that had nothing to do with food. Go figure. And right. That's when I realized, okay, these guys were onto something, because not only did it give you a sense that they were building this tribe and community of loyal customers, which is key in the business, but also it gave the restaurant the permission to do things that other restaurants couldn't, whether from asking that question or having a charity neighborhood bowl where the proceeds would go to a local charity, or having you buy or wear a shirt, you know, that might say, I am grateful. Like these things, they really leaned into it from a point of sincerity, the founders did. So my friends who made the deal for the rights were going to embrace all that. And, oh, by the way, understood real estate, which, as you know, in the restaurant business, if you get the real estate deal wrong, nothing else works.
Exactly.
Right? No matter what, no matter how great the food is. And that goes beyond location, 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 obviously. So they called me on that fateful day and they said, okay, here's the deal. It's Cafe Gratitude. We own the building. It's going to be great. It's a great deal. And we think it's a really important place. So I went, I loved it. I did whatever underwriting I could, which wasn't much. And so we did that first deal on Larchmont. And the economics on it were extraordinary. And everyone, not only did we all do well, but it felt really good. You were proud of it. Now, to be fair, a lot of people went and said, this is weird. They started calling it Cafe Attitude. But not in a mean way, but in a way that implied that if you didn't embrace their messaging, you didn't belong. And it wasn't that way, but it was a little warm and fuzzy.
The first time I went, it definitely throws you. And then you just give into it because you're like, the food's really good. And then you appreciate it. But it does take some steps.
Well said. It takes some steps. And certainly if you go in having heard about it, right? But nevertheless, the food was good. The margin's great for the operator. And we the founders grew the business, and I participated to the extent that I could in the stores that they opened. They were all individually financed. We just kept doing better and better. And the founders were doing well. And I think they were protective of the brand. But ultimately, I'm a finance guy, and the numbers were great. I do still think there's a great future. They've survived the pandemic. It took some pivoting. It's a very, very labor intensive business, as restaurants go, because it just is. Kind of Honeybee was born of that whole notion, but that's what brought me that arc from like hedge fund guy to restaurant investing.
Now you're in this plant-based world, right? So what happens? Yeah.
Well, we had done a handful of gratitudes. I had been out of the hedge fund world for a while. I think ultimately, with their messaging at Gratitude, they were always ever going to be a not a niche, but a vegan 1.0 kind of business. And I didn't see the future where we are today of growing it that much. I thought, you know, I really feel strongly about the idea of this mission of sustainability and future generations inheriting our planet. And certainly in 2015, 16, 17, you know, the world was changing. We started focusing more on climate impact, sustainability, but it wasn't a driver yet. But it was certainly a bigger deal in my world. My child was, you know, now 5 years old, and she came home from her preschool one day and said, you know, Daddy, why do we have, you know, plastic straws at Cafe Gratitude? And as I recall at the time, they were. And I said, why would that matter? And she said, well, they all end up in the Pacific Ocean and they're really bad. And my point is, Beth, not whether that's true or not, or urban myth or whatever, the point that my five-year-old was hearing it, and the fact that she has a reasonable concern that it will be her planet one day, and why are we doing this, got me thinking bigger picture. And so not that it was the plastic straws per se, it was that this next generation is going to be going to school way more aware of the environmental impact of their decisions and what we have done than any generation before. And that's kind of what rang the bell for me to start thinking, maybe we ought to lean into this and embrace it, not just because it's good and important, but because it's untapped and commercial.
It's really interesting too. I didn't even think about it before that you've been in this. I mean, Cafe Gratitude is awesome, but it is kind of old school vegan, like you're saying. Like, and I love how you say vegan 1.0 and 2.0, and I want to talk about that more. But that you've been in this, like you didn't come in this once like the world had exploded with all these plant-based alternatives and Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers and everything else that just keeps appearing on the market. You really came in when it wasn't that unsimilar to like the 70s, right? Like,
it hadn't evolved.
No.
It hadn't.
No.
No, but to get to your point on, I finally decided that after my daughter had that conversation with me, that maybe the investing I had done into the Gratitude business was really a good thing and something to be proud of. And so I put it on my LinkedIn profile, you know, which I had historically curated to be pure finance always. And that's what I built my brand around. I hate to say that, it sounds horrible, but it was. Right. And I said, you know what, I'm going to throw it on there. And months later, I got, you know, contacted by two Dutch entrepreneurs who had noticed that I did this plant-based investing and said, we have this really cool idea for you. And that's, and we can get into that if you like, but that's really what launched the next phase of my plant-based and food and ag tech investing.
What year was this when this happened with the Dutch guys?
2017, as I recall.
Okay.
So what they had was, we met at a location of a small business that I owned, and they had this bag. Look, from the outside, it was a drug deal. It looked like a drug deal. It may have been a drug deal. We were in a seedy part of town. And it was this Ziploc bag, a gallon-sized bag, and it was kind of dusty inside. And it was filled with these greenish-colored chips. From a distance, it looked like a bag of weed, right? And I said, okay, what do we have? And they said, you have the most revolutionary, you know, chips in the world in your hand right now. And I tried them, and they were great. They were fine. And they basically said, these are made from a plant-based protein called duckweed or lemna, and they're going to be great, and maybe Gratitude will be interested. And if Gratitude is, maybe you can help us bring these to market as you know, this new CPG, consumer packaged good brand. And I had underwritten a fair number of CPG brands, and they're very, very tricky and very hard to project and predict. And the chips were okay. They weren't great, but I loved the entrepreneurs. I loved where they were coming from. But I was absolutely thrilled with the idea that it was made with an ingredient I'd never heard of. And I'd been around a little bit, certainly around the vegan world. So every kind of protein, you know, from hemp and nut and seaweed and all the rest. And this was new. So my follow-up with them, I said, guys, I'd like to come down and see how you guys make it. So they said, sure. So I went down to their farm, which is in Southern California, about an hour and a half, 2 hours south of LA, in the foothills above Carlsbad, in an area called San Marcos, which is known for greenhouses and growing hops for beer and so on and other things. I went out to this farm. The farm was a prior farm for algae. So a company that was trying to turn algae into protein had converted the infrastructure and had all these big aquatic pools outside. And these guys had converted it to growing Lemna, these tiny little plants, which I can tell you about. But I was blown away. And my last thought was, this is a chip farm. Like, this is not where you make corn chips. There is something really cool happening here. So I sat down with the guys and I said, okay, I'm not interested. Chips, no. CPG, no. You guys are crazy. But there's something here. And what's here is way bigger and way more impactful and way more potential. And so we talked about it and they were very, very smart. And we ultimately came to the conclusion that the company perhaps could be rebranded, refounded as a ag tech or food tech company, making not just the plant-based protein for others to use in their manufacture, but the technology and the infrastructure and the systems and the IP that could be then licensed and used by sovereign nations to create protein solutions in countries and areas where there's no arable land and very little water. And so that's what got us excited. What was so insane was I did my diligence. There was one other company doing it, hadn't really gone anywhere. They were in Florida. And what occurred to me was, if these guys were telling the truth, and it took a minute to figure it out, that they were onto something. But far more to the point, and this is where I think it becomes relevant, is at that time, there were two new companies blowing up in the plant-based world. One was Impossible Foods and one was Beyond Meat or Beyond. And they were creating these new meat analogs made with plant-based protein, one of which was wheat at the time, and the other one was pea protein. And I sensed the opportunity there that they were going to be the first of many companies and that they were going to blow up with success. And their demand for plant-based protein would skyrocket. And that's the market I wanted to live in. I wanted to be in the way so that when they came looking for a cheap, readily available, easily digestible plant-based protein, plantable foods with their duckweed and their technology would be there. And that's what motivated the deal and the timing of it back then.
What's really crazy is also maybe because of the pandemic and everyone's sense of time is totally gone. But the fact that this is like 2017, 18, and it feels like Beyond and Impossible have been around for a decade, right?
Yeah.
What happened to Plantable?
Well, so Plantable has rocketed and they're grinding away, pun intended, down in their farm, and I think are going to be on the way to making amazing breakthroughs and making those proteins available to companies like Beyond and Impossible and many others, and also potentially making deals with foreign countries to transport and build these structures elsewhere so they can create, you know, local plant-based farms and sources for protein that didn't exist. They're on their way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And so this is vegan 2.0. Will you talk about vegan 1.0 versus 2.0? Because it's, yeah. I mean, it's really true, but I've never heard anyone put it that way.
Well, I don't want to be contentious because, you know, vegan 1.0, they're the OG, right? They started the movement and they've embraced it. But vegan 1.0 didn't get us where we needed to. It didn't turn enough of the country on, didn't turn enough young people on, didn't make it into like the common kind of mainstream in the way they wanted it to. And it was kind of pushed to the edge and marginalized, and it was weird. And the food was good, but not great and not accessible or kid friendly. And so vegan 1.0, still incredibly valuable and important in history, but I didn't think that was a way to capture the 97% of the world or the country that doesn't identify as vegan, who would otherwise, you know, maybe try it once in a while, but not really make a change. Where vegan 2.0 is specifically in our minds designed to expand the tent to the 97%. The 3% are great.
Yeah.
But they're easy.
But you don't need to sell them.
And to be fair, a lot of vegan 1.0 places are really great. But ultimately, we are shamelessly leaning into, you know, commercialism and modern trends and all that, from Instagram-friendly food, of course, that's important, to creating dishes out of ingredients that are maybe not, that a vegan 1.0 would not like. but perhaps or nevertheless superior to a meat-based analog. And we can talk about those new ingredients.
Yeah.
But yeah, vegan 2.0 is where we see the world going.
Well, as someone who probably is more vegan 1.0 in the sense of, you know, I've been vegan for a long time, for the animals first and foremost. Mm-hmm. But I also have the realization and the knowledge that the world's not going to go vegan anytime soon. And you're certainly not going to make anyone vegan by screaming about like the injustices. Very few people. But you are going to encourage a whole lot of people to eat plant-based and vegan with positive messaging and good food. And that's going to save a whole lot more animals than you know, kicking and screaming about it.
Oh, 1,000%. We say that vegan 1.0, they preach, and 2.0, we teach. And again, it's not judgmental.
It's judgmental.
It's so judgmental. My mom always taught me that whenever somebody says I'm not being judgmental, they're about to be judgmental. But yeah, so there is the messaging has to be positive and constructive, and what you can do in a good proactive way, then shame on you. What are you doing? You know, don't. So we, like, for example, outside our stores, we have a poster. It basically says, you know, dear humans, you know, I don't mind you standing on me being the planet, but if you don't mind, if you can swap out a cheeseburger for one made of plants, here's what you're going to do. You're going to reduce your CO2 footprint. You're going to save water. And oh, by the way, you're going to save a couple of cows. And I think that makes people not just happy, but they go, wow, I can literally move the needle on the planet and the future and the environment. One meal, that's it.
Yeah.
And if you can make somebody feel good about eating cheeseburger, fries, and a shake, you've won. And,
yeah.
And it turns out it resonates. This generation, Z's in particular, are really motivated by mission-based businesses that are embracing positive messaging. And so that's what Honeybee is. And that's what we built the brand around.
Right. And they're open, right? They know who they are and what they want in a way that no other generations have not in the past. And so in that way, I see it with lots of kids I know. They may not ever be vegan in their lives, but they have no issues like eating at any plant-based restaurant on the planet. And it's not, you don't have to like convince them.
We think they're going to grow up saying, why do we eat cows again? And why do we dedicate 90% of the arable farmland to growing stock and food for burgers and steaks? Like,
right.
Why is that? And they're aware of it in a way that I think obviously we weren't.
No.
And I do believe, you know, unless we solve some issues regarding air and water and land, like we're going to be forced into doing this. We might as well have this next generation of consumers aware of it and positively inclined.
Yeah.
And that's part of our tiny little mission.
And they're smart. You know, they're really smart. They get it. So I think it's awesome. So how do we get to Honeybee? Like, how does that happen?
My thought was, well, there's these new companies beyond and impossible that were innovating in ways that we had never seen before, creating patties that were beef-like in almost every way that may turn off a vegan 1.0 person. Ooh, it's too meaty. I don't eat food that bleeds. To getting people who do eat burgers, and that's the number one fast food in our country, to go, wow, this is as good. Maybe it's better. It's better for me. It's better for the planet. I'm down. And I thought, okay, there's something here, but there were precious few places to try it. And so back in 2018, if you poked around looking for a Beyond or Impossible, it was very hard to find. Restaurants that had it may have had, you know, 10 patties for the day, or it was only in Crossroads or Momofuku.
Right.
So it's really hard to get. And I wanted to build a brand that would lean into these brand new products, make it accessible everywhere in a platform that was easy, not preachy, not expensive, super approachable. And so that's how Honeybee was born in late 2018.
Okay. So you started with one, right?
Yeah.
Honeybee. And where was that?
So the first one was a tiny little space on Vermont in a neighborhood called Los Feliz, kind of a hipster neighborhood.
I used to live there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's super cool. I have newfound respect for you. Yeah. It's a cool pocket, very small. Our store was maybe 12 feet across. It was tucked under the Los Feliz movie theater marquee, so you could barely see us. But the selling floor was maybe 300 feet, small, cramped. And so we launched that in May of 2019. We started innovating with things from that tiny little store and really hit our stride in Q4 of 2019. And coming into Veganuary 2020, we were like killing it, like doing our average order size was huge. Our volumes were up, our profits, it was all good. We were actually up in the Bay Area on President's Weekend of February of 2020. We were scouting locations and doing other things. And then we got this weird note that there's this virus and what's going on. And to make a long story short, by the end of that week, the world changed, right? And,
yeah.
And so we went into the pandemic with our best business and profits ever. And then the next chapter starts.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I know that happened to so many people, but it's so heartbreaking. Like,
oh, yeah.
You're just getting off the ground and you're just blowing up and now shutting your doors, yeah. Right?
Well, no. So Beth, so we thrived. So so forgive me. So that chapter opens.
Wait, rewind. Yeah, what happened?
You have to re-edit. Oh, on the contrary, sales and profits went up March, April, May, June, July. We killed it during the pandemic. We always had small dine-in. So when they closed that, it wasn't the end of the world for us. We had a really sweet walk-up outdoor window that was already set up, which did huge business. And then the delivery platforms, as much as they were charging us, kept us going. And then we signed a lease in Manhattan, as in New York City. Not
very exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah. So that one will open, I think, in the spring of 2022. Then we're going to announce a really cool joint venture in the Chicago area. But my whole thesis is become the incumbent. So become the vegan burger brand.
Yeah.
And if we can do that, we win. If we do that, landlords call, airports call, sports arenas call, international calls. Like, that's when you really develop a presence.
Right.
And then that's when all of a sudden everybody wants a Honey Bee in their project or in their mall or in their new food court.
I get excited every time any new plant-based any place opens. And it just brings new people in. It brings people who've never mm-hmm. tried it before in. I want to talk about your menu, though. I think you are, tell me if I'm wrong, but I've never heard of a place before until you that has both Beyond and Impossible Burgers. That's pretty cool.
Certainly, you usually have to choose. And the reason for that is, generally speaking, now you can get distributors to carry both. In the beginning, you had to find people that carry them. Now it's easy. But the way the business works with branded products is Impossible would love it if we were exclusive. We'd probably get more social love, more advantageous pricing and those things. And Beyond would like the same thing. But when you dance with both partners, you know, you don't get the full commitment from either one. I'm fine with that, because I thought it was really important to the customer to have two choices, not least of which is because one was wheat and one wasn't. And then now, as you know, Impossible soy. And we do have a lot of customers who don't want soy, so they order Beyond. Mm-hmm. It does create some logistical issues, but yeah, it was a commitment we made early on. And it turns out we're one of the few that do it.
What else is on the menu?
Our first test is, obviously it's got to be vegan, but is it fun on a bun? That's, you know, if it's fun on a bun, right?
Yeah.
But that rules out, you know, kale salads and certain other items that might be vegan but don't fit. And so we have made Honey Bee become a platform for consumer discovery of the best 2.0 vegan products on the market. And what I mean by that is many people who dine with us have never had any of these products before. We've embraced a lot of category firsts and have been exclusive or launch partners to a number of brands. The biggest one was a product called Atlas Monroe. It's a vegan fried chicken launched by a female entrepreneur up in the Bay Area, in Northern California, who had this killer product. She was on Shark Tank in 2019. And her product was this really delicious, very specifically flavored fried chicken. And she had a huge following online. We carried it sight unseen, and it put us on the map with not only new communities and customers, but also for launching products that nobody else had. And we were the first. And so that opened my eyes to, like, let's use this experience to get customers excited to come back. So let's bring new stuff and say we are unabashed about being test rabbits and telling our customers, you guys are going to be the first ones to try it.
And do things come and go on your menu, or does your menu just keep expanding?
So we've never launched a product per se that we've taken off. We have expanded with discipline. What we're going through right now is a product from Green Monday or Omni called Omni Pork. And I don't know if you know it. It's a spam equivalent. Yeah. spam is a weird thing, but people who love spam love spam. But to us, it's a new form factor, and we tested it and it's really good. And there is crossover demand for that product in certain demographics.
What's the actual product you're selling? Like the spam?
No, yeah. So it does look like spam,
okay.
Which is another, it's kind of more like a pork sausage, but okay. It's on Instagram right now. We just did a test.
Okay.
Basically, I guess in Jersey, they have a thing called a pork roll or pork, egg, and cheese,
yeah.
Which it's a huge thing in South Jersey. And I also know that spam is really, really big in a lot of Asian cuisine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly in LA, a lot of the ramen places, especially the vegan ones, carry it. And we found a way to make it fun on a bun, and we tested it. And it does do one thing that our burgers, filet fish don't. It creates a crunchy texture when we griddle it, which is really satisfying and different when it's in the completed product. So we love it. We're just working on the final logistics of it.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that you try all these things too. And it's all like things that people can buy in their home, you know, and have at home too. It's like an entryway mm-hmm. to plant-based foods for a lot of people.
That's our point. So Beth, what we do get deals from these companies, like nowadays, for example, the chicken nugget people, where we get a QR code and a discount code. Hey, to the consumer, hey, if you like this, you can buy it in grocery. Here's the deal, the discount through Honeybee.
And so you're kind of like a tasting kitchen for a lot of people, you know, who would not normally try this stuff, right?
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
Do you get, because I still get, like people will say, well, it's not all that healthy. Do you get that from people or?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Our customers are enlightened. That's the next way. They're very enlightened and very aware, generally speaking. And what we say is, and it's a common thing, that it is true beyond an impossible are made. They're manufactured in a factory. They are. And if you only knew what commercial beef went through, you would not even compare the two. But nevertheless, people envision, I suppose, cow beef for burgers maybe coming off a pasture in some high alpine lake and field and beauty, and then it comes in and they wave a wand over and it becomes a double cheeseburger. That's not what happens. It doesn't happen with anything you're eating in fast food. So the beyond an impossible thing being manufactured, I'm okay with. It's undebatable that it's better for the environment. Just I can show you the amount of water that goes into one cheeseburger versus a Beyond Burger. Whether or not it's better for your body, well, you know, it depends. There's high calorie and sodium and everything, but still. But what's inarguable is that it's better for the cow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So 100% of cows approve of Beyond Burger over a traditional burger made of them. And so what we say is, look, you can do it for you, you can do it for the planet, you can do it for the animals, but these are all reasons you can think about it having a positive impact. I can tell you a million reasons why you shouldn't eat commercial beef burgers, but if we're having that conversation, I think it's a positive thing, but we get pushback all the time.
Well, and I think too, most people that come for a burger at your place, right? Would, if they weren't having a burger there, they'd probably be having an animal burger somewhere else. So it's not like they're on a health kick and they're missing out on like a kale salad somewhere else.
We agree. I mean, obviously, if you're getting burger fries in the shake, you're not thinking about your health or your
no,
diet. Or
that's what I mean. Yeah.
When people come in and they're going to get a cheeseburger, fries, and a shake, which is our most common order, it's not so much that they don't care about their health, but they know, okay, I'm about to indulge here. We just give them a tiny bit of good feeling like, you know what? You're indulging. You're going to pack on some calories, but no animals will die. You're making an impact on the future. And, you know, ultimately, it's probably better for the environment than if you didn't do it. So thank you for being here. And that resonates with consumers today, unlike, I think, any time in history.
As a vegan and someone who loves when other people eat plant-based or start getting turned onto it, it's a gateway. You know, like you're not going to turn people on as easily with tofu as you are with a burger. It's a great way for people to start experimenting and exploring.
If you get it wrong, you will turn people off, like a bad tofu thing. But if you get it right, you open eyes, and that's what right. we're doing.
That's awesome. It's like so good on so many levels. And I love that you are expanding all over the place, especially to New York City. Adam, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Beth. Enjoyed it.
To learn more about Adam, to learn about Honeybee Burger, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support Species Unite, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.